the MadTech podcast special, focusing on the most important topics in AdTech and MarTech.
Hello and welcome to today's Exchange Wire podcast special. I'm delighted to be joined today by Josh Gallagher, CEO APAC of Essence Mediacom. Josh, thanks so much for joining me.
No, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to talk about this with you today.
Yeah, it's going to be a great discussion. And we are going to be talking about turning code into creativity, talking about tech, AI, and its impact on the creative industries today. So a bit of, I suppose a general question to start, one of the hot topics of the year. How do we make the most of AI in the creative industries? How are you seeing that at the moment, Josh?
Well, I think it's a really big question, It's a bit of an unknown question, but I think it's one that has me really excited more than any other trend that has happened over the last 5 years. For me, it's more like the possibility of the mobile phone, just because there's so much in there at the moment. When we got mobiles, the interfaces, the apps, all of the functionality that kind of sat in there got people really excited and got people on board. And I think that's what AI is doing at the moment. Because you have had AI used in measurement now through to creativity and kind of everything in between, that's where it's becoming really interesting. I think what's really interesting for me is it hopefully will solve some of the kind of media and creative issues that we're having as well. So not just that pure creativity, but some of it is kind of speed to creativity as well. And I think that that's really important. We see, you know, in the region out here, consumption in general of what we do in a media perspective and how people use channels is increasing. There's more things, there's streaming, there's ad avoidance, there's different kind of contexts across the internet. Some of that's supported by advertising, some of it's not. Some of it's brand, some of it's performance, and a lot's really kind of messy in the middle. What I think is that once we have that, it's really imperative to understand how we kind of create creative in a really compelling way for people that's not your standard ad, that is enriched content, that is great experiences. And I think what AI is allowing us to do with creativity is do that quickly and respond to the pace that consumers are using those kinds of platforms. I think of like the speed to personalize creative. Instead of being followed around on the internet for 5 days by an airline, maybe it's better if I just get followed around for a day and a creative is refreshed on the second day. And that's probably a better experience. We can kind of adapt to things like culture in a bit of a faster way. But like brands can also use it for different areas, like adapting their product. It's not just about advertising. It's how do we think about product development? How do we respond to the pace of price and have kind of dynamic pricing and understanding of how consumers are using those things? So I think we can think in terms of creative, but I think we can also think in terms of how we can be more creative in the way that we have experiences with consumers on the internet now.
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting points to pick on that. I think one is the point that this is the acceleration. You know, AI has been underpinning a lot of what we do for some time, but this year has really seen like the explosion of it in practical terms and what use it is going to be to the industry, particularly on the creative side. So it's, the speed has picked up. And have you seen that kind of adoption match the pace of development?
I think it's still getting there. I think everyone's kind of testing it at the moment. I think we're lucky that we've had some kind of big heroes out there. They've got a bit of noise. Obviously, the Shahrukh Khan Mayad from Cadbury in India was a really good example of how that's used within creativity. I think Coke always come out and test. You know, they're using GPT-4, they're using DALL-E in their kind of create real magic kind of campaigns around product. So I think it's getting there. I think it depends on our perspective of where it gets used as well. Like as I said before, if I think of it just in advertising, probably I think it's around only 34% in Asia, 34% of total media consumption is ad supported. So there's improvement that we can make in there, but there's 66% therefore of content that's being experienced without traditional advertising. So there's bigger kind of content play in there. And I think that AI can really influence creativity in some of those areas. Whether that's in simple things like support services that brands have in their owned assets or bigger kind of bits of creativity or within product development as well.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's that's a big side of this is for the consumer as well, and where the consumer is going to see these developments. I think that's an important part of what you touched on in terms of the optimization is the experience it really provides for the audience. As we are, you know, harnessing AI, not just AI, but all this new tech to be more audience centric. How can we really go about that? How can we put the audience at the center rather than, you know, the shiny new thing syndrome that we sometimes have, and how we can do stuff quicker, how we can harness it, but how do we make the audience and real practical value central to this development?
Yeah, I think the danger sometimes in anything like AI or what we've been doing is that we try to use scale of data and make sense of it, and scale of opportunity as opposed to quality. Yeah. And I think even though we've got this accelerated technology that potentially could have mass adoption, you still need quality within there to be able to understand what to do and how to use it. You know, for example, I think there's a really good example of a Jakarta-based fashion e-commerce company that uses AI to predict future fashion trends. And they use some really simple things. It's like weather. It's something that we've had for a long time, but being able to predict weather patterns to understand where fashion might head in the next year or two, using things that we already have like customer feedback, and being able to aggregate that and understand that in a faster way, as opposed to scrolling through hundreds of reviews and recommendations, being able to build something that can understand that using social media trends to be able to then create designs that are really popular are things that we already have. And they're kind of smaller data points, but really useful once we start to scale them out into things like the future of fashion and product adoption in that way.
Yeah, so it's again that point of speed and using these touch points that we've had for a long time, but really making use of data at scale, like you said. It can, yeah, it's such an interesting case in point. You know, the weather as a data point that can define fashion, and it's true. I can see it. It's so interesting. And how do you feel the audiences view that? And are receiving that, this wider technology, people who aren't in the industry, but people who are being impacted by its development?
I don't think people see it at the moment in too many ways. I think as soon as it becomes intrusive, just like any technology that we layer on the top of advertising, as soon as it becomes intrusive or not a great experience, then people will push back on it.
Yeah.
You know, people push back on advertising and they block advertising because the data being used behind it isn't being used for a great experience. And I think that's the same with AI. We need to make sure that we're adding on to experiences, creating new experiences that don't get in the way of some of the things that it's trying to solve, like faster consumer journey from inspiration to purchase. Like, that should be a great seamless experience that AI and technology can speed up. We shouldn't be slowing it down by getting in the way of everything.
Yeah, and that's, as you mentioned before, in terms of optimizing creative and the speed at which we can change stuff, do you hope that can maybe impact the scale of ad blocking, I suppose, and making people more receptive if the advertising's better, more creative, or more adapted to them, more personalized? Do you think AI can help with that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we're already using some of it in some way to be able to do it. And I think it's some of it's in the measurement. So we have been using AI for a while to be able to analyze creativity and analyze, especially like static creativity, to go, what are the elements that people really like and how do we use more of those things in the way that we do advertising? So we can use kind of measurement to be able to do it and model out what works. And then obviously we can use it to create different versions of advertising and test faster and know more quickly what's working and what's not working. We also can use it better for contextual creativity as well. If we really understand we've always kind of talked about context being really important, but we've never been able to enable it in a way that's meaningful. But we have some kind of products that we use that understand what people are reading on a news site, for example, and then can serve up the right creative for that context. So it's not personalized in a creepy way or an intrusive way, but perhaps in an additive way based on the interest that they have at that time.
Yeah. And I mean, this is absolutely key going forward as we're heading into 2024, the big year of cookie deprecation. You know, it's happening. It's coming at some point next year. And, you know, contextual is definitely one of the solutions that we're hearing an awful lot about, and how we can really scale that and use it as a way of providing still effective, better advertising, but with data privacy fully in mind, which is something that we're going to need to do. How do you feel about that? And, you know, how maybe, you know, tech can help enable these solutions that we're going to need as we look to make the most of first party data and really solve for cookie deprecation?
Well, yeah, I think, I mean, you bring up data privacy. I think that's really important. But again, I think it's about experience. I don't think people care so much about data privacy, or people think about it so much in that way. And I mostly say that because if I think about people's everyday behaviors, using your fingerprint to open your phone or your face to open your phone or to pay for something, if people really thought about it, I would be more concerned around that kind of data privacy than being tracked online. But I think as soon as it becomes, as I said, as soon as it becomes intrusive, I think that's a really big issue in what we do. I think we still need to kind of, some of the best examples that we're seeing is around product and product changes. And I think that is fundamentally, advertising should be fun. It should be experiential. It should be enjoyable for people. And I think we've used technology to make it not enjoyable for people in the past because we've used it only for lower funnel kind of tactics. So if we can use first party data to create experiences that are more product centric, that are more brand building equity, which we are seeing in terms of the type of creativity that's being used at the moment, I think that's really interesting. And I think that that's really valuable for people as well. Brands will get kind of invited back into consumers' lives because they're more playful with the types of products that they have.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for that value exchange. I think you're right in terms of, you know, it has to become valuable to the consumer, to the audience. It has to augment and to, you know, like you say, be fun. It has to add something. It can't just be a terrible piece of intrusive advertising that's ruined their day when they log on.
We've got some really interesting parts of the internet that we haven't been able to use in the past, and that's not necessarily personal data, but we haven't been able to use understanding of music at scale. And music's kind of like a map of human moods. If you think about your own music habits, you can tell when someone's sad or happy or whatever it might be. Being able to harness all of that kind of listening data, use it in a way, be creative with it, at speed, at scale, I think is somewhere that's really interesting. Or you look at, you know, some of the other platforms, some of the short form video platforms is about expression, like how are people expressing themselves, that we can use that in scale content. So it doesn't need to just be first party data. It can be how we use it as a bit of an insights engine for creativity as well, and map human passion, moods, expression, intention even in a much better way.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, the point with music is absolutely fascinating, and how that really does, you know, you can certainly tell a person's mood. I saw recently online someone who recommends products for platforms, and they'd recommended Spotify have a button that if you've listened to too much Radiohead or Elliott Smith, it checks in on you and makes sure you're okay. So yeah, that made me laugh. But it's, yeah, like you say, to a more serious point, it's, you know, you can, like, this is interesting contextual stuff that can really help and help map a person's mood and also make it appropriate, make it timely, and all the things that the industry has been attempting to do for some time. I think there's also, like, personalization is going to be a big thing. I'm not sure if you're seeing much of that at the moment or what the appetite for that is, particularly in your region. How are people adapting to new tech? Is it kind of an early adoption region? What are you seeing over in APAC?
I think we're probably seeing less of personalization. I think it happens in markets. I think if we talk about APAC as a whole, it's a scaled kind of place. But then personalized, it's a very different place when you kind of chunk it down to the 14 or so markets that sit within there. So personalization can happen with consumer understanding in those markets. The fallback is always personalization that's easy or lazy, which is retargeting based on a kind of the last behavior. So I think if we can get back to understanding culture in that way. I suppose we're talking about that with music and moods as well. That's where you can start to think about personalization that is something that people will sit up and pay attention for. I think we've got a lot of markets who have young audiences as well. We've got some like Japan with increasingly older audiences, but we've got a lot of markets in APAC with increasingly younger or very younger profiled audiences. Their lack of attention can be solved with understanding of what creative hooks and what creative personalization can mean for them. The type of quality, the premium environments, but also the premium content that they use. I think that is something really important. You know, we know what they're using, certain types of platforms that have advertising formats that are super short. Our understanding of how to use those, and they spend, you know, 1.5 seconds with them, or the advertising part of it in certain times, how to kind of build more relevant content for them and not just use, you know, AI or algorithms as a blunt tool just to win that last kind of click, but an insights engine a bit more for content success than anything else.
Yeah, it's you know, the point of these attention spans and the generational difference is really interesting. Are we seeing, you know, we talk about the TikTok generation and young people, you know, flicking between videos and compare that to old linear TV styles of advertising. Are you seeing that shift? Is that something that's really ringing true at the moment?
I kind of flip and flop on this question sometimes because there's a lot of interest around and a lot of kind of hype around the fact that the younger people and younger generations do have a shorter attention span. And it's probably true, but it's probably true of everyone. I think I've got a shorter attention span than what I used to or other generations did. I think of the platforms like a TikTok, for example, or a YouTube Shorts do have that kind of shorter type of content. But then if I look at, you know, I've got a 10-year-old son who is becoming more aware of advertising and the types of platforms that are available. He would still watch a really long movie. Movies are getting longer and longer. Movies are like 2.5 hours long now, whereas when maybe I grew up, they were 1.5 hours. So we are getting much more long-form content. They're happy. I mean, I wouldn't let my son do it, but I think if I'd let him, he'd play kind of 11 hours of games a day. And that's a long experience that he might have with a FIFA or whatever he might be playing. So there's definitely some long content that sits in there. There's kind of a bit of a long and a short around content in there. But I think what technology can do is really understand what's quality. And I think that's what people are looking for. People are looking for quality. They'll pay attention to quality assets than anything else. And I think those types of quality content we've seen outperform anything. It doesn't become like an AI, who's got the best AI, who's got the kind of the bidding war that sits on top of it. You'll see in your own kind of usage, there's a whole heap of content that sits on Netflix. There's thousands and thousands of movies and TV series. You only ever see the kind of the front page, right? And it's mostly quality content that sits on there. It's not promoted content that sits on there. There might be some work in the background that preferences some things that have been produced by Netflix, but by and large, it's going to revert to what are people enjoying, what's great content. And I think that kind of interface for us is a bit of a window into the future and how we need to treat content, whether it's short or long. It just needs to be good.
Yeah, we've had years of, you know, fragmentation in the landscape and platforms arriving, providers providing, and it's, you know, like you say, it's a time for the quality to rise to the top. I suppose there's an opportunity for that to really happen, and a lot of the lack of quality, and this goes for the ad industry as well. A lot of, you know, quality, a lot of more transparency across it as well. But yeah, no, it's a really interesting time and a lot going on. And we're going to speak more with you about it at ATS Singapore in October. Really looking forward to having you. What are you looking forward to at the event? What are you excited about? And how are you feeling about it?
Well, I mean, I'm looking forward to the topic that I'm talking about. I think we're talking about attention. And that's one around quality content, quality environments. As you said before, I think that's been, we need to keep check on those kinds of areas. because what I've seen is that when we've said there's a quality environment that sits on a website, a premium environment, the next thing is it's there's a bit of an inventory war around the amount of advertising space that can sit on there, and all of a sudden it turns into a terrible experience. So I'm really interested to obviously talk about that. But I really like just hearing new perspectives on what's next in our industry. And I think there's a little bit of a grounded in reality, but how we start to look forward. Looking at the topics that I've seen, there seems to be a focus on what is going to be sustainable. And I don't mean sustainable from sustainability in terms of the environment, but sustainable marketing ecosystems, not fleeting trends that we've got at the moment. There's talk around, you know, how do I build a sustainable first-party data approach, which I think is really important. Better measurement and audience targeting, data in privacy-centric world. These are things that are going to last for a long time, not a kind of a quick trend that's happening. So I really look forward to talking to people who are starting to think about what is a new perspective on how we approach some of these parts of our industry that if we make a change now or we have an effect now are still going to be in effect for the next 3, 5, 10 years.
Yeah, looking for some more long-term thinking. Yeah, well, that's all we've got time for today. Josh, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Great to chat to you. And yeah, looking forward to hearing more from you in ATS Singapore.
Fantastic. I'll see you there.
And thank you all very much for listening.